Venture through a wasteland twisted by dark magic, undead monsters, and contagious insanity where life and death are no longer opposites, but a spectrum of cruelties. Emerging from the dregs, an old king makes one final attempt to save his realm. Today's episode is brought to you by the newest project of Lee Ellis, author of the Killdash series, Godblood. Is a grim, dark short story with the audio runtime of 2 hours available on Audible and a digital print available for those that prefer reading. This exciting adventure is available now. But parents beware, it's not for the faint of heart. Stay tuned after the episode for an exclusive audio clip of Godblood. Welcome to the Nerdy Old Men Podcast. The greatest nerd, geek, and pop culture podcast in history. With your host, Redneck Wes.
He keeps screwing up, people. God.
And that old bald man, Chad.
Come on, man. This is a fun place. Don't be a...
Good morning, Wes.
What's up?
As Wes got scolded at the doctor's this morning.
Yeah. That was heart therapy.
Doing too much. That's not a surprise to anyone who knows you.
Well, it didn't help, though, that, you know, I had, like, my Dragon Ball Z playlist going on. So, Vegeta's telling me to push through and get stronger.
So, we're at Nirvana Comics Knoxville, and we have the man, Rich Davis, with us today, fresh from San Diego.
I don't know how fresh I am, but I have definitely returned from San Diego Comic Con.
Yes. He is right.
Most of me made it back.
Well, that's what's important. Mm-hmm. You were able to get behind the wheel and drive down here today.
Yeah, and the important part's back. Yeah,
that's right. And we've got a whole bunch of our variant covers just laying here on the table here that
they
Rich has
so
signed
cool.
for us. And you guys know we have those in and we're selling those. A bunch of you guys have already grabbed them and things like that. But we're going to talk to Rich a little bit about that today and some things from San Diego and just kind of a because our interviews with you are some of our fans' favorite stuff because they really enjoy that. Well, especially the local folks knowing that you're from this area of the country and watching your career and how things are going and they really appreciate that.
Well, you know, it's always good to talk to you guys.
Absolutely.
So, always happy 100%. To come in. And I love this cover. It's honestly one of my favorites among the retailer exclusives that we did. It's got such a different vibe from the others. It's very fun and funny. It reminds me of Mythbusters, which is one of my favorite shows of all time. And Andy Dugan did a fantastic job on this. And I'm so happy that he included the translucent mice.
What was funny, I don't know if Chad had told you this or not, but we were at Fanboy and we were doing an interview. And we just kind of look over and there's a guy... You know, he sees the comic. He goes, "I drew that." It's sort of like, "Come back,
yeah, come back and talk to us, Andy."
So we actually got Andy to sign a book for us. Yes. So we've got that. So.
Yeah,
very cool.
And, our interview with him is in the coverage of Fanboy Expo 2023.
Very
so
nice.
If you want to go back and listen to that, he's on that. So.
I understand that was a really good show this year.
It was. Extremely packed.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of people.
Yeah. I wish I could have made it. I was out of town doing another convention, mm-hmm. but really, I love Fanboy. They do a great job over there. They always get some good guests, and it seems like every year they're up in their game.
Yeah, there were a lot of folks in there this time, man. I mean, it was, the celebrity, it was like all three of the four walls were covered with celebrity booths, so that was really good.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was neat, but so we're going to talk a little bit about our cover first and then move on to some other things with you. So you reached out to us and it's like, hey, you know, I think this would be kind of cool if you guys went in on it. And
yeah.
We're like, yeah, absolutely, because we love your work. And so maybe go over just a little synopsis from Prometheus and Chains for people that may be new listeners.
Sure.
And then they can kind of understand where the cover comes from. So
Prometheus and Chains is a reimagining of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein set in the post-World War II atomic age. So back when everybody was all excited about the possibility of atomic energy. You know, we're all going to be driving around in flying cars with nuclear engines.
It was basically going to be the Jetsons.
Yeah, exactly. We were going to be... By the way, the Jetsons was set in 2020, I think it was.
Or something
like
that.
Yeah, so,
man,
George.
We missed the boat on that one.
Where's my Rosie? man? That's all I want.
You have an Alexa.
Amazon sells a bot.
Yeah.
And it's, what's it called, guys?
Oh, the little robot.
Yeah. It's, in essence, it's an Alexa on wheels.
Oh, nice.
Follow you around the house, and it's like a security guard and all kinds of stuff. So
I want one almost as badly as I want these robotic Transformers they had at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, really?
Grimlock?
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's so... It transforms. It talks. It moves.
You can program it on your phone to do different things, and it'll interact with other... with the other Transformers that are motorized like
that. By the way, guys, I'm putting it out there. Anybody who really loves me and listening, it's only $1,499.99. Yeah, I've got an Amazon wish list. Just find it.
You can hook the guy up. He'll even send you a book.
You'll take the Optimus Prime, though.
I'll settle for Optimus. I mean, come on.
I can't wait till they come out with Megatron.
Oh, my God. I know. Back
to the book.
Yeah. Prometheus and Chains. Start over. So Prometheus and Chains, again, if you guys are just joining us and missed us in the last 90 seconds, Prometheus and Chains is a reimagining of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein set in the post-World War II atomic age.
Right.
Now, in this story, in this world, both Victor and Elizabeth Frankenstein are among the Jewish scientists who fled Nazi Germany in 1939. That part's a true story. Mm-hmm. A lot of Jewish scientists did leave Nazi Germany, went to the different Allied nations, and many of them came to the U.S., some right here in Oak Ridge, and they worked on the Manhattan Project. So while doing so in my story, Elizabeth is exposed to extreme levels of radiation and develops terminal cancer. And it's her death that drives Victor into a spiral of depression, obsession, PTSD, and a commitment to bring her back to life. So rather than looking at Victor in the traditional way, from it's his arrogance driving him to essentially steal fire from the gods to conquer death, it's his grief. And that allowed me to tell a completely different story, and it allowed me to really humanize Victor. Because one of the problems I've always had reading Frankenstein, watching the adaptations of Frankenstein, Victor's a very unrelatable character. I mean, really boiling it down, Victor's a dick.
Right.
And you don't sympathize with him very much. The creature is the victim here, and Victor's the monster. And, you know, we look at that. We do keep that theme alive in Prometheus and Chains, but Victor's a bit more sympathetic because this story is not easy to read. It is not a lighthearted jaunt through Victorian era science fiction.
Right.
It's very heavy. It's about a guy dealing with PTSD. And most of you guys listening here know my story. My wife passed away in 2020. And so as you're watching Victor work through his issues, you're actually seeing me work through my issues.
Right.
This is out of everything in this book, the most important thing in the book is when you open up the front cover inside on the credits page, there, and actually on the back of the book too, there's a number for the National PTSD Hotline. That's very important to me because there are a lot of us out there, especially a lot of men, a lot of veterans especially, who deal with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we don't talk about as men because we're conditioned to avoid our emotions, to bottle them up, to avoid facing them. And so my hope is that one person out there reading this book who suffers from PTSD will see Victor struggling with his PTSD and know that me, the person who wrote it, is struggling with his PTSD. And maybe that one person, instead of picking up a gun, he picks up a phone.
Yep.
And if that one person can do that, I'll take that over 250,000 units sold.
Right.
That makes it more important. I mean, this isn't a messaging book. You know, it's not a, you know, you're not going to have, you know, Jesse dancing around. I'm so excited. Yeah. I'm so tired. It's not that, you know, it's not one of those after school specials, but it is, there's a heart to it. And, there's a purpose. So, I'm very proud of this book. I've said many times, and I will say it again without hyperbole, this is the best thing I've ever written. It is probably the best thing I will ever write.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear it in that way. Plus, you've got a personal connection to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is you poured your heart out into it. Mm-hmm. And it going through it, it still has the visual feel mm-hmm. of your work, you mm-hmm. know. And so that you get that, which I really like. Plus, there's that personal aspect as well.
Well, it's got to be very cathartic for you just to kind of get it out. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you've been working through it. But... you know, the fact that it could possibly help somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be.
That's huge, you know, and it was absolute hell to write this book. Like there were literally many times that I would finish a scene and I would turn to the trash can next to me in my office and vomit.
Yeah.
There's not a single issue that I didn't finish literally sobbing in tears. Mm-hmm. I put everything with, it's no holds barred. I don't hide anything. I don't sugarcoat it. I don't try to make myself look heroic. I mean, this is raw. This is what Obi-Wan Kenobi was going through in the TV show Obi-Wan, mm-hmm. but on transparent steroids.
Right.
Obi-Wan is my, out of all the Star Wars television series, Obi-Wan's my favorite because I can relate to it so much. You know,
and that's something that I've said, we've talked about that before, but I mean, Obi-Wan is the most tragic mm-hmm. story in Star Wars.
Absolutely.
I mean, he just keeps, and he's probably the strongest willed character too, because he just keeps getting hit in the junk over and over and over again through his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the worst things, all the people that he loves, mm-hmm. he loses them all.
Yep.
And it's just over and over and over again, but he just keeps trying to fight that mm-hmm. and fight the good fight.
And that's a noble fight. When I was watching Obi-Wan, something my grandfather said to me a long, long time ago, he passed away when I was 12, but he was a 36-year Marine. He went in during World War II, came out after two tours in Nam. He served two tours as a drill instructor at Paris Island, and he was a huge advocate for mental health awareness and mental health resources for service members. Mm-hmm. And he told me one time, he said, son, he always called me son. Mm-hmm. He said, you cannot send boys off to war and ask them to do what we need them to do and not expect them to come back broken. Those extremely powerful words have always stuck with me. And, I've long been an advocate for mental health awareness, support many charities that do that over the years. Because, you know, veterans charities are very important to me. I come from a Marine family. Mm-hmm. My cousin Nate is currently in the Marine Corps. He's done 4 tours to Afghanistan, and he suffers from PTSD. He's actually testified before Congress about the need for more mental health awareness in the Marine Corps. So, you know, there is an effort out there to do that, and our veterans and our current service members, they deserve nothing less.
Right. And you know, it's also, you talk about the men aspect of it too. It's at least nowadays when things have become more, more apparent and talked mm-hmm. more about service people with that. But so that's sort of understood that that mm-hmm. is a thing. But it's the other folks, the other men like yourself, mm-hmm. they go through things that still have to deal with that. Public safety people, mm-hmm. police officers, firefighters, EMS,
yes.
that still have to deal with that. And it doesn't have to be that. It could be just people, mm-hmm. just human beings that something traumatic happens to them. Mm-hmm. And especially men, you're right, but women as well, mm-hmm. that think that they need to keep all that inside,
yep.
and it has adverse lasting effects.
Absolutely. It makes it worse.
And you being able to put your talent and your emotion and your feelings and all that into a product or into a project like this that hopefully can help other people, mm-hmm. because they can see through a fictional character something in themselves.
Yeah, they can see themselves reflected back in that work, and they can be like, wow, and maybe people out there, they have PTSD and they don't realize it, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like, somebody shows up and says, you know, hey, are you Chad Riggs? Yes. You've been served with PTSD.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't work that way.
No, you're absolutely right.
And a lot of the symptoms, they can be brushed off as, I'm just having a bad day, you know, because sometimes they're pretty mild, and then sometimes they're extremely terrible. Like I recall very vividly, the first time I had to go back to UT Medical Center after Amber passed, and I was walking down the aisle or the hallway where I had waited while she was having her kidney transplant surgery, and the walls started like wavering, like mm-hmm. like you'd see in almost like in Star Wars when you go to light speed, but without all the lights, everything's just kind of shaking on the end. And I found myself in the midst of a full-on PTSD flashback. I saw myself walking, pacing the halls. I saw myself sit down on, you know, kind of squat down against a wall where I did when I was extremely worried. I mean, it was, I was there. I heard it. I smelt it. I saw it. And, you know, that's the extreme version of PTSD. That's what most people think about when they think of PTSD. But there's a lot of other little symptoms, too. It's like, I just don't want to get out of bed today. Or when I get out of bed, you start counting down the hours until you can go back to sleep.
Yeah.
You withdraw from people. You see things, you hear things. Those are very common and very severe. But yeah, you know, you're going to see Victor go through this. And a lot of people, thankfully I didn't do this. Really the only fictionalized thing is Victor's addiction. Thankfully, I've never self-medicated, never been that type. But a lot of people with PTSD do. So, yeah, we see Victor deal with all that. And somewhere in there, we really do have an engaging horror story.
Yes. And what's interesting about this, too, is the monster, the creation,
mm-hmm.
is not your traditional Frankenstein
not at all.
Monster,
right?
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
It's a different aspect.
I really enjoyed that. You know, I've kind of made a mark with my career of one, reimagining classic Victorian horror, but also playing with gender roles in the book. And my philosophy has always been, unless race or gender are essential to the character and essential to the story, it can be whatever you want it to be. And in this story, it was more personal for me, mm-hmm. and I felt like it gave us the intimate connection and a deeper understanding of Victor. Instead of making the creature just a random person that he stitched together from many, many body parts, it's Elizabeth. He's piecing his love back together. And, you know, there's a little bit of a metaphor there. He's piecing his life back together.
Right.
And it made it so much more intimate, and Victor became to me he became such a sympathetic character, and there was a lot more depth, a purpose behind, because the arrogant factor, I don't know if it's just because I've read it and seen it so many times that I'm just desensitized to it, but Victor being an arrogant jerk who just wants to prove he can do it,
well, it's not interesting. His hubris is kind of what brings him down in, like what you're talking about, the traditional mm-hmm. story.
Exactly.
And I'm real big on, like, I don't like things changed just to be changing.
Exactly.
But in this, it makes sense, and it's, especially as far as being a device to move the story. And even though it's a quote unquote a Frankenstein story, mm-hmm. it's a different story.
My favorite review, and this book is, look them up, it has received across the board just glowing reviews from a lot of the big sites. And my favorite review out of all of them was, "This is the most faithful adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein I've ever read, yet somehow Rich Davis gave it to me in a way I didn't expect."
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And that's the only time I'll ever refer to myself in the third person, because I was quoting a review there.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Rich Davis doesn't talk about that.
Rich Davis is a cool dude.
And that's the bottom line, because Rich Davis said so.
That's right. So...
I'll tell you a Neil Adams story off the air, because it's a bit colorful language, so probably can't do it on your podcast. But I'll tell you off air.
He murked the adults.
You'll have to come see us at the cons to find out Neil's story.
So, on a lighter note, this cover, mind you, when you see this cover and you buy it from us or wherever you get it, which is only from us, but when you do, understand that this is a very lighthearted cover, mm-hmm. but the story is not.
Yeah.
Be sure not to buy this for your kids.
Right. Oh, God.
Well, I don't know how you could make a serious cover with us on it.
Well, that's true.
You know, that's a great segue into the age appropriateness.
Right.
You know, this is, it's rated as a mature book, but honestly, you know, and parents make your own decisions. I'm not telling you what to do. Mm-hmm. But this is the type of book that I would have been reading when I was 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. The only reason it's really rated mature is some of the language in there and the violence. There's really, it's not an overly sexualized book. It's a love story. Actually, my original working title for the book was Frankenstein, A Love Story.
Right.
And guys, don't get turned off. It's not like, you know, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
It's not no, it's definitely not that. Romance, it is not that.
You know, but it's a true love story. And so, yeah, I would say, in my opinion, this book would be appropriate for 16 and up. Because really, you're going to read worse in some of the books that they require you to read in school, which I highly encourage you to let your children read. Don't censor your kids. It doesn't protect them. You know, it only makes them want to sneak around and do things behind your back. So right. embrace it. Talk to your kids. I mean, that's kind of the simple rule of parenting, isn't it? Just talk to your kids.
Well, that's always
vitally important.
Yeah.
You know, have to do that.
So you guys have seen the cover. It's me and Wes depicted on that, and it was interesting because Rich sends me a text one day. He goes, "Hey, I got an artist that's ready. Just send me some pictures." So yep. I sent a couple pictures of me and Wes,
and the guy did great, man.
He nailed Chad's. I'm not big on the Alabama red hat, but
yeah, I'm like, what in the world? I thought you turned traitor on me there, Bubba.
I was like, can we get that change? They've done send. I'm like, dang it.
Well, you know what? It's a little bit of a light and faded Alabama cap, which I think is
that's the even state worse.
Of Alabama. No, it's the state of Alabama right now. They're kind of light and faded.
So I just see all these people
kneeling next year. Yeah, cut right. those tails and that's go right. back home.
Yeah. So, can I draw like a little UT on it or something?
Yeah, well, you can draw it if you want to.
It's your cover.
So what's interesting here is that I'd given Rich a urban legend story mm-hmm. from around where I work, and it got depicted in the cover, which mm-hmm. is really, really cool. So an urban legend in this area is that in some of the facilities around here that helped in the Manhattan Project, that there were some studies of mice. And mm-hmm. so when you start thinking about that, you think, what kind of cool stuff could be doing that? And that's why you have these mice on the cover of this that you can see through. And you can see their organs working, and they're crawling all mm-hmm. over the place, and they're on the Frankenstein monster, and Wes is trying to grab one to move it out of the way. And it's yeah. And it's really, really cool. And we're really, really glad and proud that you allowed us to get in on this project with you.
Remember when you told him that story, his eyes got like, the size of half dollars. Yes. He's like, oh, I'm using that.
Yes.
You want to know some top secret breaking news?
Absolutely.
Going to be spoiled on your podcast.
100%.
You, Wes, and the translucent mice actually make it into an issue of the book.
Dang it. Yes. Yes. I was hoping that would happen.
Yep, because awesome. That story was just too darn cool.
You can't let that go.
Yeah. And so it's a little Easter egg in there. You know, if you're looking for it, you'll find it. If you're not, it doesn't detract.
This is going to be one of those little gags that'll end up in Aldridge's books now. Yeah. Somewhere in the background.
I do that sometimes. Yeah. Like a couple friends that I met when I was doing Phoenix Fan Fusion, I think 2021, you know, they were friends. They were characters. They made me laugh. And so in my next book, Reign of Dracula, this scene was actually going to be originally a part of Rise of Dracula, but I had to cut it because of, you know, keeping it within page count.
Right.
But it was such a good scene that I kept it and transferred it over to Reign of Dracula. And it's just these two guys, they're in a really tense situation. And instead of focusing on the intense situation, they're sitting here arguing with each other about something ridiculous. And it's so funny.
That's all. I can't wait to see that because I have loved the Dracula series of yours. It's fantastic. My daughter has loved it. I bought her I guess it was Cult of Dracula, the mm-hmm. trade paperback. Yep. She loved that. It was so good. So we're big fans. But before we move on to your San Diego Comic-Con stuff, sales pitch for us. Tell people why they need to buy this cover of your book.
Buy it because they put a gun to my head and made me say so.
True. It's a fact. You weren't supposed to say that, Rich.
Oh, darn. I'm sorry. I panicked under pressure. Oh, my God. Take it back.
We'll delete it out. But, you know, all your first print books, they sell out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, so this is a first print of this, and there's only 100 copies of it.
Yeah,
so.
Prometheus and Chains is completely sold out at the distributor level, every single issue, every single copy. I've been hearing back from the retailers who have done exclusives. They're sold out. The book's got a lot of heat from it. It's from a smaller publisher than my last book. It's from Red 5 Comics. Mm-hmm. They're out of Houston, good guys. And so their footprint in Diamond was smaller. So for this book to sell out its entire first print run was incredible. And then pre-orders for 2 and 3, they're very, very strong. 2 comes out in a couple weeks, then 3 comes out next month. So go check those out. Go to your local comic book store. I don't care where you go. Just ask them to order Prometheus and Chains. It's a book you don't want to miss out on.
Yeah.
I can tell you, prior to the Writers Guild and SAG-AFTRA strike, we were in discussions with another film company to option Prometheus and Chains. Cult of Dracula was in active development prior to the strike. Everything's on hiatus right now.
Yeah.
They do expect the strike to resolve itself pretty soon from what I've been hearing from them. And so right now we are still on, I keep saying we, I have nothing to do with it, but they are
it's
on.
It's still your baby, Rich.
Exactly. They're on track to still begin lensing on schedule in April of 2024. Awesome. With that success, and we'll be able to announce the bigger news about the Cult of Dracula movie, because right before the strike, we hit a big thing. So we'll be able to talk about that. But with that kind of heat, that kind of buzz, Prometheus, it'll be optioned when the strike resolves.
That's fantastic.
We were having really good discussions. So getting the first prints, now's a good time to be doing it, because they're extremely rare. This book, issue one, only had a 10,000 issue print run. And that's simply because it's Red 5 Comics. They're very small. Cult of Dracula right out of the gate sold 25,000 units, but which was huge for an indie book. So this one was cool, giving you guys a little bit of behind the scenes industry mm-hmm. knowledge here. Yeah. We actually sold, more retailers bought Prometheus and Chains, but they ordered fewer copies than they did of Cult of Dracula. And we were getting feedback from them. And the biggest response was, well, you're Red 5. We didn't know. A lot of them didn't even see it. And then, of course, there's the economic shift in the industry where people are, concerned about the economy and things like that, which is understandable. But, as J.P. Morgan famously said, when there's blood in the streets, spend money. Now's a great time to be scooping up these low print run comics. The collectibles market in general is down. Buy.
Now's the time to buy. Just like stocks. You can't buy low.
Don't buy it when it pops. I mean, if you wait until, November, December, January, when we announce that Prometheus has been optioned, forget about it. It's too late.
Right.
Instead of paying $5 for a book now or $20 for your awesome exclusive, it's going to be $20-$30 for a regular copy and $50-$60 for these.
Right.
Buy now. Yeah. That is a sales pitch for you guys, but it's also sound advice.
Well, for anything, especially if you know ahead of time that it's going to go somewhere or your last book sold out so quickly, mm-hmm. it's time to jump on that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So. Now, I want to go back real quick. Cult of Dracula has been optioned for.
It's in development. It's not optioned anymore. Yeah.
If this one goes optioned, could we possibly see how Universal has the classic mm-hmm. horror movie, mm-hmm. Could we see a Rich Davis take on that universe?
That is exactly what I'm in the process of doing right now. I'm creating it in print.
Wes is dying for a
creature from the Black Lagoon.
I know
the story.
I actually, Chad gave me mm-hmm. an idea for how I want to do that story. That is
You're
something
welcome.
That I've thank you. That's something I've got in the works. About midway through, issue 3 of writing Rise of Dracula, I decided as a little Easter egg, I was going to introduce Victor Frankenstein. So I introduced Victor in Rise number 3. He's a little scientist. He's been captured by the Templar hunters and forced to do some sort of science experiment on some vampires that they've managed to capture. And it was going to be a little one-off thing, you know, showed up in a couple scenes. That was it. And then I started thinking to myself, man, I really want to write a story with this dude. I really like the character. And it'll sound insane to anybody who doesn't write, but I actually have conversations with my characters. You know, that's how I write. You know, I ask them, you know, what are you up to? Where you want to go? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Victor told me a really cool story. And so I started to write it. And while I was doing that, I was like, well, I've done Dracula. I'm doing Frankenstein. Why don't I try to do, and I had an idea for Dorian Gray at the time. And that's Dorian's my favorite of all the Victorian era horror. And started thinking to myself, you know what? I should do what Universal tried and screwed up. You know, a shared horror universe. And so I started writing that. And if you pay close attention to my books, I'm pulling kind of a Pixar in every single book, in every single series. I tease the next series. Like in Cult of Dracula, I introduced a character called Carmilla, which is actually the vampire story that Stoker based his Dracula off of. It wasn't Vlad Tepes. It was an Irish short story about Carmilla. It's a fantastic story. So I introduced Carmilla, and then in Rise of Dracula, Carmilla plays a massive role. She's essentially the impetus for everything that's happening. Issue 3, I introduce Victor Frankenstein. In Prometheus and Chains, I introduce my next book. So,
and you'll have to wait.
You'll have to wait and to find get that.
Out. So that's going to be awesome. No, so yeah, I'm
creating that whole shared horror universe.
He wrote a
book
about us because he's stuck us in there. So
we're going to go with that
it's
anyway.
It's a horror podcast.
We are going to go
we
with that.
We just don't know that we're in a horror movie.
Being your friend is a horror movie. Sir.
It is.
So I've heard.
So you're his friend too. So you're in it now. So going to San Diego.
Oh, yeah.
Mecca for cons, right? So what was that? Was this your first time going, or have you been before?
This is my first time at San Diego.
The granddaddy of them all.
It is, I've done a ton of cons. And you know what? I put it in my head. I was like, it's just another con. It's going to be fine, whatever. Dude, I got off of the airplane in San Diego, and it hit me like a train. I was like, my God, I am at San Diego Comic-Con as a professional guest.
Yeah.
How the hell did that happen? You talk about having a mind blown. It just kind of
a surreal moment.
Yeah. I stopped. I'm just walking along in the airport, pulling my bag, my little roller bag behind me, and I just stopped. And I was like, geez, Louise, I'm at San Diego Comic-Con as a guest.
Yeah.
Man, it blew my mind, dude. I keep telling people, I don't know when my 15 minutes of fame are up, but I am enjoying every single second of this ride.
That ride.
I'm going to stay until the bouncer comes, taps me on the shoulder, and says it's time to go, and then I'm going to fight him.
Yeah.
I want to stay. I don't want to go. No. You can't make me.
So that was pretty cool. Were you there individually? Were you there a guest of Red 5?
A bit of both. I was there mostly with Red 5. I did signings. This was a really cool experience. Most cons I go to, I'm sitting at a table and I'm signing, I'm selling my books all day, But here at San Diego, I had very specific signing times. I had signing times with Red 5. I had signing times with Space Cadets. I was scheduled to do, I was actually part of the official San Diego Comic-Con eBay Live sale.
Oh.
So I got to do almost an hour on there talking about things. It's cool. A podcast on steroids where they're selling stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And that was really fun. So I got to do several things. I was more scheduled at this con than any other convention I've ever been to, but I also had more freedom to explore the convention because I didn't have to be at
your
booth
table,
all day.
Well, that was something I was going to ask you if you got to kind of experience.
Oh, yeah.
The con itself.
Oh, yes. San Diego Comic-Con.
I saw your pictures.
Yeah.
You got a bunch of cool stuff going on there. Yeah.
And there's more I'll be posting up there. But man, I mean, you cannot, you cannot fully explain San Diego Comic-Con. You have got to see it. I mean, it's just massive. It's not limited to the indoors. It's not just at the convention center. It's outside. It's on the port. It's up in the gas lamp district. It's blocks around that convention center. It's incredible. And they've got, you know, you walk down and, you know, the Voodoo Ranger people have rented a massive pirate ship and they're having a rave on it. I got to go on the YouTube yacht and, Kevin Smith was hosting a party up there. My guest badge got me into that, which was awesome. But all down the marina, there's these ships and they're all having these Comic-Con parties. And then, you know, you go over here to the left and they've built out of this big, massive inflatable tent, the Planet Express building from Futurama. And you go around the back and the Planet Express ship is crashed into it. And you can go through this whole interactive experience in there.
Oh, that's neat.
Star Wars had this huge thing where they were showing previews and teasers of their upcoming stuff. Image had a huge booth, and then just the artists and the writers, you know, the ones that San Diego Comic-Con is so huge and has so many guests that some of the big time famous artists that you would think would absolutely be up here in the Golden Circle Artist Alley, they're out there on the floor, like Brian Polito, J. Scott Campbell.
Really?
Yeah, they're just out there. They've got their booths out there. His name's slipping my mind, but the guy who created Lady Mechanica, I mean, just so many awesome comic book people were there this year. And it was amazing. Todd McFarlane.
Yeah, I was going to say the Todd father was there.
Saw that. And he wasn't over there in the celebrity area. He was out there on the main floor. Now, he had a huge footprint.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was just out there.
I saw something somebody posted. And I think it was Alex Ross. And they've got, like, his artwork, like, down the streets.
I got a picture of me with that. I'll show you.
Oh, okay.
It's awesome.
That's good. You know, I mean, huge. I'm sitting there going, just looking through who all supposed to be there, and I'm like, holy smokes. Uh-huh. It's just, it's crazy. And then there's my buddy Rich. He's hanging out with him. It's just like,
what would you like to go to such a big thing there and have people come to your booth as fans? Because, you know, we're at a con and people come up as fans to us,
and we're sitting here looking at each other like
what?
Are you sure
at the right place?
I know. It's like, you sure need that?
And people come up and want pictures and like for us to sign our little pictures or the books or something. I'm like, really? Okay, cool.
You're sitting here thinking like, oh, I get it. You were really waiting in line for that dude. Yeah, you just stopped and talked to me, right?
So what was it like to be at the con and have folks come up and go, I love your stuff?
It was pretty damn cool.
It's got to be validating for your,
you know, it is.
External validation.
Yeah, you know? And, you know, honestly, you know, it's humbling in a way because, you know, you think, you know, yes, I worked hard on this. And there's a great line in Barbie, instead of saying thank you, which, by the way, go see Barbie. It's fantastic. But, you know, she's one of the characters there, like, instead of saying thank you, she says, you know, I worked really, really hard for this and I deserve it. That's easy to think. You can say that, but it's really, really hard to think because, you know, I worked really hard on this. And, you know, maybe I do deserve it. I don't know. But you still don't get used to that. That imposter syndrome it's real. You know, you still sit there thinking like, you know, I'm here hanging out with real comics creators and I'm just waiting to be bounced, you know. But the more I keep doing these cons, the more I figure maybe the bounce is going to get somebody else before he gets to me,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's so super, super
that's
cool.
As close to a brag as I will ever get
No, we'll brag on this.
Well, no, but I mean, the fact that you have created this, I'm going to go ahead and call it this, the Rich Davis horror verse. I
can dig that.
I mean,
yeah. I can dig that.
You know, you've actually, you know, I mean, because you're on your second part of
third.
It. Third.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, you've got people, you know, like Todd McFarlane. You know, he created Spawn. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you've created characters
mm-hmm.
that people enjoy.
Yeah.
People want to read.
Yep.
Your stuff and see what you've come up. You know, what's you come up with next?
Yeah.
You know, what's the next story?
I was having a conversation with Joe Pruitt, not at San Diego. This is at another convention, I think Heroes Con. I've done so many of the already kind of run together. except for San Diego. That definitely stands out. But I was having a conversation with Joe Pruitt from Aftershock Comics. And Joe's a friend. I've known him for years. And, you know, I was telling him, like, dude, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this next book. I don't know if anybody's going to pick it up. And he's like, Richard, shut up. He's like, you have got 18 issues, 2 graphic novels in print. You've got another 6 issues graphic novel. It'll be 24 issues, 3 graphic novels by the end of the year, and 2 more projects already greenlit. You're a comic book creator.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? Because I don't feel like it, man. Right. I still feel like I'm that dude who's fighting, you know, having to, like, sell myself and prove myself just every
single grind.
That grind. It. And, you know, I think that's just my mentality. That's the way I was raised.
But maybe that's why it's successful, too.
I think so, too. You know,
because when people get too big for what they do, it starts sucking.
It does. Yeah, you get caught up into your way of doing things. You stop being original. Yep. But, you know, I do believe that when you work hard, you know, I saw my grandfather work very, very hard growing up. My father still works hard to this day. My mother had a lot of really good examples in my life about a work ethic. And so I'm very proud that I've picked that up. And, you know, I think when you do work hard at something, you will get good at it. And when you get good at it, you will achieve results. So, you know, I'm proud of where I am. And I'm very grateful. Mostly I'm grateful for these opportunities. You know, it's a really cool experience. A lot of people don't get to do this. And I do. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity. And, you know, when the ride's over, the ride's over. I'll look back with a lot of fond memories, but, I'm just going to enjoy it while I can.
So he'll be going when he gets done, he'll be going to all these conventions in, like, the members only jacket and the dark sunglasses.
He says, I don't do that now.
I made that.
Well, before we let you go, you got to give us a name drop story, something from San Diego Comic-Con, somebody that our folks will know that you got to meet, that you talked to,
you
or something, some
on,
kind of cool story, something like that. Maybe a fanboyed at something. Give us something.
Well, I already told you the Kevin Smith story.
Yep.
On the eBay Live show that I got to do, the person that followed me onto the show, he was the next guest. He's a pretty decent comic book creator. Some people know his name. Some guy named Jim Lee.
And so, I wish I'd known you were going to do that. Say, I'll see you in September when I go to Cincinnati.
Yeah, right. So we were just sitting back there in the green room area, just just chatting and talking. And, you know, at first it didn't click in my head who he was, you know. And then I was like, I didn't say it out loud, but I was thinking to myself, my God, that's Jim Lee.
I was going to ask you, that's Jim Lee.
And we had just had like a 20-minute conversation waiting to go on, and it just wasn't about comics. It was just about stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was like, holy crap. And so, and then I went on before him and did my thing on the show. And when I came off, I call him Mr. Lee. I'm not going to call him Jim. We're not on a first name basis. But Mr. Lee was like, wow, your books really sound interesting. Can I get a copy? And he was offering to buy them.
And when Rich gets up off the floor, he responded with.
So, sure. Hell yes. You know, I'm like, you know, I went and I told him, like, look, I don't have any with me right now. I'm going to go back to my booth. I've got
Rich is going to start carrying like a backpack full of comics.
So I found, you know, I went and got a, you know, copy of the Cult trade, the Rise trade, and issue 1 of Prometheus. And of course I signed them, you know, Mr. Lee, thank you for being such an influence on my life and inspiring me to create. Because it's a guy, you know, I grew up.
Oh, absolutely.
My God.
We all
did.
Jim Lee.
Yeah. It's Jim freaking Lee.
Absolutely.
And my books are in his hand. You know, now whether or not he reads them or, you know, chucks them, I don't care. I got the story. I got to put them in his hand.
Well, I mean, if the man asked for them and he didn't have to.
Right.
He could have just said, hey, good job, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
And got on. He asked for them.
He specifically asked. past. And
he was interested in them.
Yeah, he asked about Prometheus, and I went and got him everything.
Yeah.
I was
yeah.
like, eh, here you go.
Take,
you asked.
Please, you read stuff wrote I did.
Yes.
But that's just wild.
He's like, never mind, dude. Never mind.
All of us that were reading comics in the 90s.
Hell yes.
I mean, he reinvented the X-Men.
Heck yeah, he did. I mean, he defined, when you think of the X-Men,
the Jim Lee.
You're thinking of Jim Lee.
Yeah.
You know, people of our generation and every generation to follow.
I mean, because we had the 80s X-Men, but when you say X-Men, the first thing, yellow and blue on Wolverine.
Absolutely.
The 90s cartoon, which was
brilliant.
Absolutely. But it was taken straight off the pages that Jim Lee did, and they just said, okay, just make our characters look like his characters.
Yep. That was it.
And they did. But it's like that's...
Yeah.
That's when you think X-Men, that's, you know...
It's mind-blowing. it was a crazy experience. Prior to that, my biggest experience was at Dragon Con when Brian K. Vaughan came up and bought a copy of Cult of Dracula. And at first, I didn't recognize him because, Brian K. Vaughan's not a big, not a boisterous person. He's not somebody you would... Because mostly he just sits behind and speaks to his writing. But I recognized him and nearly fainted at that point. And so, Jim Lee, that kicked that one up a notch.
That's pretty awesome, man. So where can people see you next, man? Where are you going next?
Hang on, I got to think about that. it's August. My next con is actually going to be around here. I'm doing CreepyCon.
Okay.
So, yeah, those folks, guys, I got to tell you, I've done a lot of cons in the past 2 years. These guys are fantastic. I mean, they have got their stuff organized. They've got it together. They take care of their talent, their guests. I mean, it's amazing. I'm really looking. I know it's a smaller convention, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. So, go get your tickets to CreepyCon. They've got an amazing lineup of guests. It's going to be all horror focused, which is awesome. Go check that out. I've got Dragon Con coming up in September. I tried to limit myself this year to average one a month, maybe two if I have to. I've got another one in August that we haven't worked out the contract yet, but I'm probably going to do it. I got Dragon Con. I've got Scarefest coming up in Kentucky, New York Comic Con. I'm an Artist Alley guest there again this year. And then probably about that same time, I'm going to Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash to do my signing there.
That's fantastic.
I was supposed to do it in 2021, but COVID restrictions kind of messed that up. So finally going to circle around and get to do that. It's going to be a fun con schedule, a little bit lighter than last year. Oh, and in December, I'm doing Big Apple Comic Con again in New York because those guys are fantastic.
That's great. That's awesome. So when you go at any of those places that Rich said, go and see him there. If you got a copy of our book, I'm sure he'll sign it for
Absolutely.
You. And then you can pick up some of his other awesome titles while you're there. But, man, thanks for hanging out with us this morning.
Thanks, as always. Happy to be here.
He's such a busy guy, and we really appreciate that, Rich. So check it out. We're excited to see what comes next. Please keep us in the loop, because we want to talk to you about it.
Will do.
All right. So, Wes, don't get in trouble anymore with the doctors for doing too much.
I will do my best.
Whatever. Until next time, this is Old Bald Man Chad with Rich Davis and Redneck Wes.
Yeehaw.
Now, a sample of Lee Ellis's God Blood.
Came up for Rogot's belly. He parried, elbowed Garagot in the teeth, then slammed him into a tree. Through the tree, and out the other side, and into the dirt. Splinters fell all around, and the severed tree came falling, crushing a giant mushroom to the earth. Garagot kicked Rogot, and he went soaring. flipped backwards and crashed down 20 paces away. The Mushroom King was up and after him. Rogot grabbed his axe, pulling up a handful of leaves with it, and leapt to his feet. Their weapons collided, and they were at it again, snarling, hacking, shoving, and punching, god blood thumping in their veins. Garagot thrusted the flat side of his blade hard against Rogot's axe, pressed him back, then shoved a crust-covered finger deep into Rogot's ear.